big rocks and all that sort of thing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, John.
Hello, Mick.
How are
Mick
you?
Mick Wall of the Mick Wall Podcast.
Johnny James Hotton.
Yeah.
Also of the Mick Wall Podcast.
No, I'm not. No,
oh, very much
I'm
so.
I'm not of you, am I?
Well, no, you're very important.
Like Odin, you know,
ingredient.
Son of.
You know, you're like what they call, you know.
I'm the magic salt or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm like the salt that Salt Bae puts on his steaks. On his million-pound steaks.
And
can
I
you afford a million-pound steak? What if you can't get out of my restaurant? Did you see him rubbing his salty hands on the World Cup? That was amazing.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, Salt Bae. Do you not know who I'm talking
about? I do now,
Salt
because you
Bae.
Reminded me.
Yeah.
And Infantino, the FIFA president.
He got his head and rubbed salt into it, and now Infantino's enthralled to Salt Bae.
What a wanker. And doing the selfie
no, I
at
like
Pelle's
him.
Coffee.
Yeah, I like him.
Pelle,
I like him.
Pelle.
You know, they had. There's an actual FIFA rule stroke law on who's allowed to touch
to
the
touch
world.
The cup,
and
right.
Salt Bae said, fuck that shit. I'm touching the cup, mate. If I'm here, I'm touching
with
the
my
cup.
Salty
and
hands.
And he goes around, you know, Dubai or wherever he is, rinsing rich people. Make it turning it green.
Turning shit green.
I say fair play to Salt Bae. I like the guy. If you're stupid enough to pay $2,000 for a fucking steak, then it's your own lookout, isn't it? As my dad would have said.
Is he Dubai based?
I don't know. I think he's got restaurants all over.
All over.
People
the world.
Are queuing up for a steak with a bit of. Have you heard if you put salt on steak, it tastes really nice? Especially
I never
if you
knew
sprinkle
that.
It on from
a great,
great
height.
It tastes even nicer.
Yeah, mate, or if you just sort of throw it in the
yeah,
air.
Throw it, yeah. If you get Infantino's head and rub salt into it, it makes the steak taste amazing.
I would like to have a steak cooked by him, but served on his head.
Yeah.
You know, with the necessary.
Well, no, not Salt Bae. Salt Bae's got hair.
Oh,
you want it off Infantino's head. Salt Bae's got, like, pulled back long hair. Of course he has.
Of course he has. Do you know in Dubai, though, a friend of people.
Though this was in Qatar. Let's. I'd say
you
it was
say
the World
Qatar,
Cup.
I say Dubai.
Yeah.
Is there
same difference?
Same
really.
Difference. Yeah. You know, friends of friends were working out there, and so my mate, he was visiting his daughter. He went out there, and he came back. He said, "Gosh, it's just unbelievable." He said, "How much everything costs?
Price of the steak." Yeah.
So $2,000 for a steak is probably like a McDonald's.
Yeah, well, it is to them. I mean, it's. Yeah.
He said. I forget what drink it was, but, you know, a cocktail would come with actual gold leaf.
Yeah, well, the Salt Bae puts gold leaf on his steak.
Does he?
Yeah, and charges you $4,000. He's amazing. He's got it sussed. The guy's clever, you know.
I take my hat off to him. Right, so we've got a few things to discuss today.
Well, you said you were talking about the news. The news,
yes,
you said.
This is a news-based
pod.
You just revealed some tremendous news I had no idea about. If you could press A it for me.
Well, you no, because you said this is a news special. I said, have we got any news? You said no.
And you came up with a hot
so I said,
seat.
Oh, I came up with a story that's a mere 3 weeks old.
That'll do.
Yes, there you go.
Time
so
this pod goes like, out, be another 3 months old.
Yeah, about like the Kerrang days. How old's that
it's
story?
It's not being. See, John, it's like when I was editing Classic Rock.
Were you the editor of Classic Rock?
Because it was a monthly. I always used to impress upon the staff.
Especially Dave Ling.
Oh, well, he didn't get it at all. But it's not about who's first. It's about who's best.
Yeah, that's true.
You see?
Yeah.
So we're going to be best with the news. Now, spill. What was it? Can I just say, before you say anything, just before we went on air, you were saying to me, I'm not going to get cancelled for anybody.
Yeah, especially
you. I promise you, you're not going to get cancelled.
All right, all right.
So give me the news.
Well, because this to me is a serious, this is a light-hearted podcast.
Well,
to my mind.
It has dark places.
You think it does. I don't.
Well, we agree to differ.
All right. So,
give us the news.
Steven Tyler,
oh yeah,
the singer of Aerosmith, who now looks like your granny, you know, with his grey hair piled on top of his head.
He smells like it as well.
Oh, I haven't smelled him. Yeah. He's being sued by a girl who...
Well, she's no longer a girl, is she?
She's no longer a girl, but when she was 16 years old, Tyler did the old Jerry Lee Lewis and persuaded her parents to, as he says in his autobiography, sign a piece of paper that enabled him to take her across state lines
and
essentially have a relationship with her when she was 16 and he was in his 20s.
The bit of paper... gave him guardianship.
Here we go. Here's the quote from Tyler's book, which you think might be hoisting him by his own petard. Mm. Tyler says he almost took a teen bride.
Almost?
Almost. God, I don't think they got married. I think
he was just with her
for 3 years. And that quote, I'm quoting now, her parents fell in love with me. Signed a paper over for me to have custody so I wouldn't get arrested if I took her out of state.
Across state lines.
Yeah, I took her on tour with me. Yeah, for 3 years.
That, for context, they met in 1973.
Yeah, but now here's the interesting thing. Here's the interesting thing. And now there's been some recent legislation in California where this suit is being filed.
Surprise.
Which has just removed, I think, some sort of statute on how far back you can go.
Right.
Because I think the Me Too movement has... Yeah, I mean, you know, things that happened to you in your past aren't necessarily past for you if they're still affecting you. So,
especially if the person that's affecting you is a multimillionaire.
The woman filing the lawsuit has said, and I believe her, you might not, but I do. I want this action to expose an industry that protects celebrity offenders, to cleanse and to hold accountable an industry that both exploited and allowed me to be exploited for years, along with so many other naive and vulnerable kids and adults. Now, I think I know what you're going to say, but let me first say, I think there's an element of truth in this. I know the 70s were the Wild West. I know the old inverted commas, everyone was doing it. I know the mores and the morals of the time were different. And it's
especially
very,
in LA.
And it's very dangerous to suddenly... But I'll throw a name at you here.
Ooh.
Roman Polanski. Now, Polanski has, you know, no one says to... everyone was doing it at the time about Roman Polanski.
She was 15 or 13 even. Yeah. Very, I mean...
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, 16 is still underage.
In America.
Yeah.
Right, because in this country, you can get married at 16.
Yeah.
Okay, Roman Polanski, I'll give you that. That's
but
a very extreme example.
It is an extreme example, and I'm not conflating...
I mean, he didn't take her... He didn't live with her for 3 years.
No, I'm not conflating...
He raped her, basically.
I'm not conflating the two. But it is to say, it isn't just a case of saying times were different, anyone could do what they want, because they couldn't.
Okay.
Elvis is another... Elvis, you know, and the sad passing of Lisa Marie, but Elvis and Priscilla, that was, you know, she was 14 or something, persuaded her parents.
Yeah. Because he's Elvis fucking Presley.
Yeah.
Look at those poor kids whose parents were only too happy to let Michael Jackson have his way with them.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to hang out with Michael or be... I don't even fucking know.
So
little Jimmy's off to Michael's house.
For a sleepover.
Yeah, because Michael, we're all friends.
Someone once said, if you like children that much, Michael, where are all the girls? Which is very true.
But, hang on. Again, an extreme example. I'm not trying to mount a defence. I'm offering context, okay? My context that I would offer here is, Michael Jackson didn't nearly marry one particular child or live with them until they were 19 or whatever. Again, give me a chance. Tyler, who back then and now could have a million different girls every night of the week, and I'm sure still did in his spare time, because everybody did. But this girl was with him for 3 years, and he had the legal bit of paper.
Oh, come on.
He had, no, hang on. He'd done due diligence. Yeah, put it that way, due diligence.
Yeah, that's right. And I quote, her parents loved me.
There you go.
I got them.
And he said he almost married. He said he almost married.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, but you don't put that in your book
her
if it's not someone special.
Her parents were in love, fell in love with me, signed a paper over for me to have custody. Custody.
Yeah.
Custody. That's what you have for all a above child.
Above
That's what you
board.
Have for a child.
All above board, you see. Look. Why would he put it in the book if it wasn't a significant moment for him?
Exactly. He put it in the book, and now he's thinking, he's probably suing his ghostwriter. It wasn't you, was it? Now we're getting to it.
I said, Stephen.
You put in
we've got to leave
job.
That bit out. He said, nah, fuck off, Mick. You'll be the one that gets sued. I went, all right then.
By
I have
me.
Some more money now. No, look, clearly it's fucking bad. I'm not trying to say it's not bad. Of course it's bad. I'm just interested in the actuality.
Yeah, that's
which,
right.
Which, hang on. How many teenage girls, and I mean younger than 16, must he have fucked in those years? No, hang on.
But that's why
but
they, we...
Yeah, but he doesn't recall them in the book. He recalls this particular one because she must have been special to him.
What difference does that make? It makes zero. It makes zero difference.
No, love
zero
conquers all.
Yeah, but yeah.
Especially in the 70s.
Don't be so ludicrous. There, you know, you've got a relationship so imbalanced by power and money.
That's
and
how
fame.
I like my chicks. You know, I'm the guy.
See, this
they're
was
the chick.
My fear. This was my fear in doing this podcast.
All right. Look, okay. All joking aside.
What's interesting is it's throwing new context on those times, and the genuine argument to be had is, do you retrospectively apply today's morality to yesterday? That's sort of what you're saying, is that, you know, Tyler at the time wouldn't have necessarily thought this was as jarring a thing to do had he had a brain in his head.
Had it not been 1973.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I mean, so there is an argument to be had about that. There is an argument to be had about that. But equally, there is an argument to be had in the other direction to say, look, come on, you know, if everyone was doing it, i.e. everyone who wasn't a rock star was doing it.
Well, in fairness, John, there was a fair bit of that too. I mean, I, back in the 70s, 1975... a dear friend of mine, a little bit older than me, was an art teacher. And the girls used to just love him. And he ended up with a 15-year-old. And they were together for about 10 years. Further on in his career, by the time you get to the early 80s, he's now an art lecturer or something at one of the unis. I won't mention which one. And he gets another girlfriend, also 15, who he then spends many years with and gets to know her parents and all the rest of it. I'm not saying any of this is anything other than it wasn't just rock stars, but clearly it was the new bohemia. You know, I mean, I was 15 in 1973, so I'm about the same age as this woman. And...
Stephen Tyler never asked you out.
Not yet.
No.
I still carry a candle.
Yeah.
There was a, following on from the 60s, there really was a different atmosphere, if you like, and it was considered enlightened. And it wasn't just sex, but it would be drugs. And I remember in like 74, when I was 16 and I left school and getting to know guys that are a little bit older that didn't live at home, and you'd go around and they'd have all the porno mags lying around for you to browse. Mm. You know, it was just was kind of,
well, it's interesting. I mean, we spoke earlier off pod when we weren't on this on the CB radio together, whatever it is we're doing with all of the listeners and the readers and the
callers.
The callers. about the new Bret Easton Ellis novel, which is fantastic. And
yeah, which you've read. You seem to mention a lot, seeing as you got an advance.
But Ellis is a sort of great iconoclast, and is controversial in the point that, you know, he's a sort of anti-snowflake, and he makes great fun of his boyfriend, who is much younger than him, and he's, you know, his boyfriend has the kind of mores of the time, whereas Ellis has the more kind of robust morals of the
early.
But to the point where the new novel is about him at 16 and 17.
Fucking when, anything that moves. And being fucked by older men.
Yeah, exactly. And saying, no, you know, I don't feel exploited. I didn't feel exploited. I don't feel like it's ruined my life. I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
You know, he's putting that case. So, I mean, yeah, all I'm saying is that debate is being had.
And I think it's correct because, you know, Me Too obviously is very broad, and it's rightly so. Any woman that feels...
Well, person, I mean...
Absolutely. But the kind of the core of Me Too was about Harvey Weinstein... And that culture of you're a young actor in Hollywood.
It's about power, isn't it?
Yes, but you want to get ahead in the movies. This powerful man says, come to my hotel suite. You go knowing it's cheesecake time. You don't know he's going to rape or assault you, but you know.
You know you have to go.
You know you have to go, and you know you're going to have to probably put up with some shit. Yeah. The casting couch goes back to the big dawn of Hollywood. Rock music in the early 70s was definitely different to that.
Yes, yeah.
Because I doubt Tyler was saying, well, I'll make you a rock star. I mean, maybe he was. I really doubt it because he didn't need to. But, you know, young girls...
No, it was just that it was the kind of... I mean, in a much less innocent way, it was the almost famous thing. It was, you know, you're from small town America. What's ever going to happen to you? Well, just at the time you're starting to feel rebellious and you want to break out on your own, the circus comes to town.
Yeah,
you know, and you hitch a ride.
Yeah, but that wouldn't necessarily be how the bands would think of it.
No,
because that's the same everywhere they go. It's Groundhog Day for groups on tour, and. You know, in London in the 60s, my friend Wayne Bardell, who used to co-manage Hawkwind, who you mentioned in the last pod, fantastic guy, really smart, you know. And his girlfriend was Donovan's ex-girlfriend in the 60s. And he got a job working at Apple, the Beatles label. And he used to tell me he got the job because he allowed, you know, the guys to fumble with him and bum him and whatever. I was like, really? He said, Mick, everybody, that was how you got by in the 60s in the music business in London, because it was just a small, it was just that Soho area. They all knew each other.
Yeah.
And of course, all the impresarios, apart from Don Arden and probably Peter Grant, but they're all gay. So it was a culture that they accepted. That to me is a little closer to Me Too, if you like, because there's a job at the end of it. The thing in the early 70s, and I speak as a teenager at the time, was you couldn't wait to get out there and have experiences, you know. Drugs were considered consciousness expanding. You weren't considered sophisticated. Sophisticated is too big a word. You weren't considered switched on, you know, if you had any kind of big objections to sex or drugs. And I'm sure in the 60s with the so-called permissive age, there's loads of examples of women that were so terribly treated, allowing their boyfriends or husbands to have orgies because, don't be hung up, you know, all that shit. But the rock bands, I think it was pretty fucking simple. And particularly LA, you know, where, what was her name? Laurie Maddox, the 14-year-old girlfriend of Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
A Sable star who fucked everybody, including Iggy Pop. She's a friend of Laurie. She's 14, 15. She ended up going off with Johnny Thunders. That was a one-way ticket to hell.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So there weren't very good outcomes for a lot of these people. But then you look at, say, Pamela Debar in the late 60s. And she wrote that book, I'm With the Band. Elton John doing Tiny Dancer in 1971. You know, you could say that's a pedo's charter, but that wasn't how it was meant. It, if you look at, I was doing the Hendrix book and the Doors book, looking at testimonies from that time, and the idea of being a groupie at a certain point in that history was actually considered pretty cool. You know, the Tiny Dancer, it's seamstress for the band, you know, because they'd be fixing your clothes and doing your laundry, and it wasn't stigmatized. Now, clearly, there would be lots of instances where there was just brutal, groupie sex and fuck off again stuff, as there is today.
Yeah, but so the question is now, you know, should that be dealt with? And you would say, well,
retrospectively.
Yeah. You'd say, well, it's not being dealt with in a criminal court, let's say that. This is a private lawsuit.
Is she saying she was damaged by it?
I have to get back.
Or is she saying, I just think it should be stopped?
I've got to turn the phone back on.
You haven't actually turned it off, have you?
Well, no, it just went. It just goes
since
off.
Since before the pandemic.
It doesn't stop making sounds. It just decides.
So when you say turned off, you mean on.
It just went to sleep. A bit like yourself.
Well, I'll fill. While you did this exciting thing of looking at your phone, I will fill by saying, I remember when I met Slash in 87, 88. And he was saying to me back then, because AIDS was the big thing then, before Me Too and all that, there was AIDS. That was the spectre from the past that was going to come and bite you. And I remember him saying to me, I tell you what, man, he said that sooner or later a rock star will go down with AIDS. And he goes, and as soon as they do, we all will go down with it because we all fuck the same chicks.
Yeah.
They turn up on the road. Now, I could name you, and I won't because that will get me in trouble, but I could name you several high-profile women managers of rock artists that got their big break, as it were, because they were groupies, because they fucked these guys.
Well, I won't go into the rest of this Tyler thing because it does get very dark.
So she claims she was damaged.
I would go out. And I would say, go and read about it for yourselves.
Okay.
Think about it for yourselves, people. This is a light.
You decide.
This is a light-hearted podcast.
No, it isn't. We go dark.
You say that.
Yeah, we go dark. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, let's do something else now.
Oh, okay. Well, moving on. There was an item.
Let's move on from this.
Wow.
You know.
So there was something that I was going to mention because it leads into something else.
Yeah.
But recently,
hold on to your hats, listeners.
Before Christmas, there was a tweet I noticed, and I didn't realise who the writer was. It was actually a friend of mine. I just had no idea. And it was
the writer of the tweet?
Of the tweet and of the article that he was tweeting.
Okay.
And he was talking about the best music books of recent
ever.
Times.
Okay.
And
of course, your name featured
heavily
on that list.
Prominently.
Yes.
Prominent. He led the debate.
Number one.
Probably not number one, no. Yeah. But he comes to the Dio book and he gives it such a glowing review. And particularly myself, he's kind of like, Mick Wall, established a great reputation. Research. Mate, speaks to everyone.
Yeah.
Goes places.
Yeah.
You know, where people don't go. Definitely
doesn't just look it up on the internet.
God, no. And I'm reading this thinking, I didn't speak to anybody. It's a ghosted memoir.
Yeah. Ronnie wrote it. Yeah.
And he ends by saying, look, you know, this is by far the definitive biography of Ronnie James Dio. Until one day, perhaps Ronnie's own memoir will come out. I'm like, oh, fuck off, man. Yeah. You didn't read it, did you?
Yeah, he didn't read it.
So I did a piss-taking retweet, and it turned out it was me old mate Joe Daly.
Okay.
He's a really lovely guy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, he was ringing me and messaging me. And
What have I done?
I changed it.
What have I done?
I said, you're dead to me.
You've not read the book, Joe.
You mean you've not read?
What's it called?
Rainbow in the Dark.
Rainbow in the Dark.
How dare you not know that?
You've not read Rainbow in the Dark featuring Mick Wall. Ronnie James Dio featuring Mick Wall. You've not read it.
Also featuring Wendy Dio.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It does feature Wendy. Wendy.
So, but it led me, in trying to sort of reassure Joe not to get too worried about it.
Oh, you just look, man. All publicity is good publicity by me. You should see some of the things other people have said.
Well, just reminded me of the many, many times over the years where... Because people don't realise. They go, oh, you didn't even read the book.
I mean, I thought, before I went to Crank, I thought when you reviewed an album, you listened to it.
A special room.
Yeah, and you listened to it a minimum of 10 times.
In the special
room.
That's
what I thought. You had to listen to it 10 times.
After about an hour, someone sit their head around and go, what's it like?
Unless you could prove you'd listened to it 10 times.
Well, you'd want to.
They wouldn't run the review.
But you'd want to, and you'd compile notes.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
No. Definitely not. No. But to offer context, how long does it take to read a fucking book? Long time,
man. I mean, fucking whole book.
Long time. An album, those days, come on.
Joe is a good guy. I'm not going against Joe, but you only probably really need to read the blurb to realise that it wasn't a biography.
That you met a bit where it says, by Ronnie James Dio.
You didn't even need to read the blurb. You just need to read the cover.
Yeah. In fairness, yeah, you're right. But what people don't understand is, what do you get paid? Like 30 quid if you're lucky?
Who was it for?
Classic. Maybe Metal Hammer. So
I probably don't even pay you at all.
Well, if it's 200 words, it's probably like 20 quid or something.
Yeah.
Why would you spend all weekend reading a fucking book for 20
Just
quid?
Just send me the list of books you want me to say are good. I'll say they're good. And then send me the 20 quid at the same time.
It reminded me of the times on Kerrang in my early days.
Yeah, certainly not in your later years.
No, when I was far more...
Because you'd only review an album by your mates at that point, which is a whole different thing.
Well, they were all my mates.
They were all your friends.
Yeah, I was in the studio while they were making it.
Apart from Poison, they were.
We were best buds, and then we had a falling out, all their fault.
Yeah.
And then me and Brett made up.
Oh, that's true, you did, yeah.
So, but in the earliest days of Crank, it was still fortnightly, come out every 2 weeks. And they had the culture page, remember, with a K?
With a K, yeah.
And it would review
relevant
films.
I was the editor of it, very briefly.
Were you?
Yeah. Well, actually not so briefly, yeah. Well, it came with the whole brief of, you know, generally all the pages that Dante couldn't be bothered to do.
You know, I'd be sent to see a film that I really wasn't interested. I remember going to see Conan the Barbarian with Xavier.
I thought you'd say with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No.
I haven't seen one with Xavier.
We were so drunk that I couldn't remember a thing the next day. You know? And I thought, what am I going to do? So in those days, probably still now, but in those days in London, there was a magazine called Time Out, which came out every week. And it was all about movies and music and the arts. And they'd have really sort of penetrating reviews.
Yeah.
So I thought, a little peep in there.
By people that could be asked to see the film.
Prompt my memory.
Yeah.
And so I read the review in there, and I thought, well, I'll have a bit of that, you know. Whatever.
Rephrase it.
Just about. Yeah. and then it'd be a book. I'm like, a book? Oh, for fuck's sake. You know? Yeah. But Time Out would also do books. So I got to the point where I wouldn't bother going or reading the books.
Just read it in Time Out.
Read the review. And that was fun.
That worked for how long?
Well, a little while. But then I hit upon the spectacular idea. Because it went from Time Out to, oh, look, the Evening Standard have got a review.
Oh, yeah.
Can't just keep doing Time Out. No. I got to the point where I went, whatever they say, I will say the opposite.
Opposite, yeah, that's a good idea.
So, like, the greatest movie, the new movie set, and I'll be like, it's biggest pile of shit you've
rubbish.
Ever seen. Yeah. Don't go, it's rubbish.
Yeah.
And no one ever came up on the radar, ever. Ever. So I don't blame someone for making a little mistake.
Yeah.
But what about you? I'm sure there were times when you had to quickly bash out
even now
copy.
Even now when I if I'm assessing, you know, should we review this book or not, I don't read the whole book.
Why would you?
You're just trying to work out, is it worth me reading the book? Yeah. So no, I agree. I mean, you know, people seem to, and I when you're on the other side of it and you get reviewed, if people don't get what you were trying to say, you get annoyed about it. And if you think, oh, well, you've not, you know. But then, yeah, you think about your own reviewing process, which is basically, can I make myself sound good in the course of this review?
Oh, no, I never trod that path, ever.
You know, can I make sure that the record company will send me a, you know, nice bottle of something or invite me to lunch because it's such a good review?
They used to in those
days. You
know,
that's what I'm saying, yeah.
When I reviewed nice Hounds reward. Of Love in Kerrang, yeah, they sent me a bottle of champagne.
They said you'd come around to have a date with Kate. For writing that one.
That's another story.
That was such a good review of Hounds of Love. Kate would like to take you out to lunch.
Well, I'd already met Kate, of course. I'd been
times.
Around her house,
yeah.
You see.
Yeah.
With Ray Palmer taking
can
the pictures.
Can you imagine what that was like?
Well, I was there.
Yeah.
And he was saying to lean over. He goes, that's it, hold your shoulders together. And afterwards I said, what were you doing? He goes, look, this is Ray talking, not me too. He said, because even birds with no tits, you get them to lean forward and squeeze their shoulders, they get cleavage.
Yeah. He was on to the whole Wonder Bra thing before that came out. He should have invented it. Ray should have invented it.
Ray knew how to shoot a woman
with
his camera.
Yeah.
His tripod stacked with no film. Where were we? They'd send a bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
So what... To give me an example of, you know, a shameless act of...
Well, actually, this isn't quite the same thing, but I remember reviewing in very poor terms Aerosmith's album.
Oh, we're back to them.
Yeah.
Which album?
Was it
their one from 1973?
I think I did a few, but there was one, and it's the one that's got a cow's udder on the front.
Oh, yeah. What's that one? In the 90s.
I can't remember what it's called. Yeah. And
Nine Light? No.
Yeah, whatever it was. And they sent me a gold disc for it.
What?
Which I've still got hanging in the loo. Taking it down now, Steven Tyler's gone, me too. But yeah, they sent me a gold disc. The record company. Yeah.
I'm really pissed off at that. I'm pissed, man.
What, do you want it? You can have it.
Yeah, I'd love
it.
Really?
Do you want it? Well, it says to me. I mean, it doesn't say you can cross out my name.
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah.
If anybody listening, I'll tell you what I'll do. If anybody listening wants it for their charity auction or something, hit me up. You can have it. You can have the Aerosmith gold disc, but it has got my name on it.
Charity auction?
Yeah, they might
get
some money
for it.
They are callers. Might get some money for it.
We'll be
callers.
Getting some calls.
Yeah. I can't remember. It's called Get a Grip. That's what it's called. Remembered. Yeah.
Was that the one that
Get
had
a Grip
Pink
album?
On it?
I don't know. It doesn't tell you the tracks. No. Track three.
And you reviewed
track
it?
Track three.
They sent you a gold record.
Yeah.
Did you even listen to it?
I don't. What? You can't listen to gold records.
No, the album you reviewed.
Oh, no, I'm sure I did, because I didn't like it. I listened
didn't
it
like it?
Listened to it once, didn't like it. Not going to listen to it again.
So did you give it a bad review?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Off, you
no, seriously,
you silly old man. That was the whole point of the story.
I missed it.
A bad review and they sent me a gold disc. Yeah, why? Because I would suggest because there's a slight disconnect between the record company and the band.
Wow, so you wrote a bad review, and they gave you a gold record.
Yes, how many more times are you going to say that?
Well, you know. To me, that's far more extraordinary. Than Steven Tyler getting his leg over with a teenager in 1973.
There used to be loads of gold discs in the Kerrang office. Some of them had our names on. Some had my name on. Some had your name on. God knows what happened to them all.
Some of them had my
name. Yeah, there were loads of the bloody things.
My name?
Oh, come on. You know there were. You had it. I'm sure you must have had a Guns N' Roses one.
Yeah, but it wasn't in the Kerrang office, was it?
Well, I don't know. I can't remember. I just remember them being
there. I
would
not have left that in the Kerrang office.
Yeah, I remember them being there. That's all I remember.
Really?
Yeah,
you bastards. Stole them. You stole them. That's my Me Too.
Yes. Yeah.
Back in 1987.
Yeah. Did Cove send you one? DC.
Rice pudding.
Yeah.
Rice pudding, Michael.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah. So, extending that thread just one little step further, with my books, I'll say Hendrix and definitely The Eagles, which comes out later this year.
Pre-order now, fans.
Because I just yearn to do a novel, and because I actually, like in the sort of James Ellroy universe of, I think the fiction tells the truth
better than the fact, yeah.
And when I say fiction, I don't mean making stuff up necessarily.
Interpreting.
Interpreting and
that's
representing.
That's what it's about, yeah, it's about.
Representing in a more vivid way. So you use vernacular. Like when they were editing the Eagles book, one of the questions was repeated use of the word chick. Shall we turn that to girl? And I went, no.
No, because that's what they said.
Because it's 1975 in LA and you're in the Eagles. There were no girls, but there were a shit ton of chicks.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know, because again, they're applying this woke...
Were you lucky you didn't get a morality reader?
Fuck off, they don't have those. They don't have those. A morality reader?
Well, I read a whole piece about this at the weekend. And, you know, it's sort of... cultural appropriation. You know, should you be writing about a, you know, 15-year-old, you know, Australian girl? You know, if you've never had that experience, it's idiocy.
What a load
of complete
bullshit.
It is complete bullshit. Yeah, it's bullshit, man.
That shit don't turn green.
No,
not
exactly,
for me.
Yeah. You want to turn shit green? You got to write yourself some bullshit, man.
So Nabokov. You know, his book Lolita is no good
because there was I think the end of the piece was a list of, you know, it said would these books still be published today?
Go on, what was in there?
Well, Lolita, which is you know a great masterpiece, although often debated.
To me, the people that debate it are doing it in a prurient. Is that the word prurient or purient?
Yeah, it's prurient. Again, it goes back to Tyler and applying the morality of today, but this is to something a piece of high art, not to, you know, love in an elevator or whatever it was called.
Cover of Electric Ladyland by Jimi Hendrix, 1968. A gatefold, one of the earliest ones. Loads of naked women.
Yeah.
But they're not like pinups. They're just real women with real... They're young and many of them are quite attractive, but not all of them. They're just real women.
You did the old marks out of 10, did you?
Well, purely for the book.
Yeah, yeah.
Purely the as whole, an academic.
Yeah. When the editor phoned, there's a very long chapter in this book about the cover of... Yeah.
It's not normal to insert pictures into your chapters, but I see where you're going.
Or drawings. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Stick inset with boobs. I find the whole thing, you know, it's like, oh, the guy that wrote Alice in Wonderland, you know, was he a pedo? Or Peter Pan, whatever the fuck it was. You know, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't fucking care. They make it sound as if it's a complete one-off. But it isn't. You know, it's not just artists or writers or musicians. It's life. And yeah, of course, there has to be a clear distinction between assault and blah, 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 blah. Of course, absolutely, in any era. But the mores of the day, you can't know what's going to happen in 50 years.
You can't know. Today's issue of Jurisprudence is brought to you by Mick Wall.
Right, any other news?
I don't know. Is there any other news?
I'm sure there's a lot. I was reading about Axl Rose.
Yeah.
Coming out. No. No, not yet. No, that's next year. No, talking about Lisa, his friend, Lisa Marie Presley.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a...
A friendship.
He had a lot to say.
Did he?
What did he say? Well, I've got it on the screen. Do you want me to find it?
Well, do you want me to get the Steven Tyler stuff up on my phone? Yeah, find it. Go on.
Oh, God. Hang on. This was only meant to be a brief coda. Where are we? I have to get my reading binoculars on. Okay, here we go. He mentions many things. I will miss my friend Lisa, her passing just as her son's, or as a kid, her father's, doesn't seem real. Blah, blah, blah. Heart goes out to them, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, because I think her son died, didn't he?
He killed himself. Yeah. He shot himself in the head when he was 27. Right. I think that was only like in 2020. Her son's passing was shocking, tragic and devastating, Axl said. It was something that, at a point, you obviously don't want to bring up, but awkwardly would, in an effort to let her know you cared and were thinking about her and blah, blah, blah. I wanted her to be happy, to feel good about things, blah, blah, blah. But truthfully, it didn't seem, at least without some real time passing, a reasonable reality. I think that's quite measured from Axl there.
Yeah, he's got
a good point. And he goes on and he says some more. You can read it on Blabbermouth, and I'm sure other available...
Other outlets.
Did you see the pictures of her? She'd been at some event just a couple of days before in LA. She just looked terrible, you know? Like someone who has been through the most devastating tragedy. Yeah. And if you think, you know, we've got children in their 20s. I mean, it just doesn't bear thinking.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Yeah. And on that joyful,
uplifting note.
Joyful note.
Join us next week.
for
more.
Suicide is painless.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you, John. Lovely.
Thank you, Michael.
I'm looking for the stop button. That's why I'm gabbling still.
There it is.
Till next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
How do I stop this, Fern?